Thanks for listening to Exploring the Wine Glass podcast, the podcast for people who love wine. I'm Lori Budd, a UC Davis winemaking program and WSET Level 2 graduate. You can find Exploring the Wine Glass on all the socials, as well as your favorite podcast catchers. If you haven't subscribed yet, now's the perfect time. I promise I'll never tell you what to drink, but I'll always share what's in my glass. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Exploring the Wine Glass. Please take the time to rate and review the podcast to help me get in front of more listeners. There are an increasing number of people looking for podcasts to listen to, and you can help them find me. Thank you. As we continue to social isolate, there seems to be more and more time for television. I actually finally signed up for Netflix. I may have been the last person on earth who wasn't watching Tiger King, and now I must admit, it is a freak show that you just can't turn away from. When I wasn't watching The Freak Show, I scrolled over to Amazon Prime and found a movie titled Tin City. I was introduced to the film late last year through an email from a marketing team, but never had the time to watch. So I figured, hey, now is as good a time as any. For anyone who follows my blog or listens to this podcast, you know that I adore Paso Robles. That's where we chose to start our winery and where we see ourselves for the rest of our lives. And we have personally seen how Tin City has grown. Not only has it grown, but it has played a major role in the increasing recognition that Paso Robles has seen. Plus, it is just a great place to visit. You will often see us there, especially after a long day of wine and enjoying some barrel house brew. Enjoy listening as I interview Dina Mandy, director and producer of Tin City, a documentary featuring rebellious, creative winemakers, brewers, and distillers working at the razor's edge of their craft. Sláinte. Hey everybody, welcome to Exploring the Wine Glass, sponsored by Dracena Wines. Today on The Allure of the Pour, I am sitting down with Dina Mandy, photographer, film director, a lot of stuff going on in her life, and we are talking about Paso and Tin City and more stuff that I was blown away when I started researching the things that she's been involved in. So welcome, Dina. How are you doing today?
Great, Lori. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely.
Excited to be here. Yeah.
Absolutely. When I saw the video, I wanted to watch it immediately because of our love for Tin City and Paso Robles and everything. If you read the Exploring the Wine Glass social media, which is the social media aspect for the blog and the podcast, what I have is Paso proponent, Paso Robles proponent, and Cab Franc champion. So anytime I can do anything to support Paso Robles, I am all for it. So I'm excited to have you here.
Me too.
So before we get into the movie and that, just tell us a little bit about yourself. Where did you grow up and how did you get into the film industry, and bring us up to speed on Dina?
Okay, awesome. I actually grew up, I was born in L.A., one of those rare Angelinos, and then my mother got remarried when I was 12, and she dragged me kicking and screaming from Orange County to the Bay Area, where my new stepdad lived, and I'm an only child, and I was raised by a single mom, and so for years, it was just the two of us, and then we were living in Pinole, El Sobrani area, and they bought a lake house at Clear Lake. And so we would get in the truck on, this is back when the kids could put a sleeping bag in the truck with no seatbelts, and watch the stars like driving up from the Bay Area up to Clear Lake, which is a good 2.5 hour drive, I want to say. But we would always stop at Taylor's Refresher in St. Helena for hamburgers on the way. On Friday nights, that was our ritual. And so my folks fell in love with Napa Valley. And they fell in love with a community that was growing grapes and making wine. And my stepdad was a realtor. So they ended up buying 100 acres in Santa Luna in 1976.
Oh, my God.
For $260,000.
You can't get a quarter of an acre now.
Not at all. And we would have these family excursions pretty much like from Easter weekend until Labor Day weekend. We were up there almost every weekend. And they bought 100 acres. It had a really janky, old, decrepit, 100-year-old ranch house on it that was made of wood, and then it had a funny old cellar that was a stone room. And the property was beautiful. It was 3.5 miles east of downtown St. Helena on Con Valley Road, right where Howell Mountain Road splits off to Con Valley. So we're out there. And the closest winery at the time was just to the west of us over the hill, was Joseph Phelps. So the property now is what's known as Anderson's Con Valley.
Okay.
So my mom sold off 40 acres in the 80s to Todd Anderson's folks, and then she ran a bed and breakfast. Actually, she and my dad built a big house. They built their dream house, and then they promptly broke up as soon as it was. I know, it's so sad. Sad and funny and kind of typical. I mean, they say, like, the quickest way to break up is build a house together, right? Like, but she stayed, and bless her heart, she ran a bed and breakfast in that house for 30 years. Oh. And it was called Bartell's Ranch and Country Inn. And she sold, like I said, she was trying to hang on to the whole thing and then ended up selling part of it to the Anderson family. And then she sold the rest of it in 2007. But Todd Anderson and his family have done an incredible job. And I've gone with my husband now to go taste there. And they've built caves, and they have beautiful wines. And the vines they planted were just absolutely amazing. So that's when I was a kid. I ended up moving out when I was a senior, and I wanted to go back to Southern California, like, you know, any rebellious kid, like, I'm getting out of here. And then I had a long, circuitous route to education, which ended up taking me 13 years, mainly because I had my son when I was 19.
Okay.
So, I'm such a proud mama. My son is now an animation supervisor at Walt Disney Studios.
Wow.
When he was a teenager, and we would make little short films together, and he took what he learned from me and then just, like, I mean, 2 Oscars, right? He's
Wow. That's incredible.
I know, it's really cool. But so I grew up there, went back to LA in Orange County area, and then it's funny, 3 times as an adult I moved back during the 80s and the 90s while my mother had this bed and breakfast. I moved back 3 times to help her with the Napa Valley, because here I was living in the city, which I was happy because I was building kind of a thriving career there, but then I would always be pulled back to, like, a slower pace and a smaller town and being surrounded by food and wine. You know, it's always just been such an appeal for me. So I moved back 3 times to help her with her B&B, and we were like cats and dogs. Like, we could not work together at all. She's nuts. So I just kept going back south and doing my thing, and I kept, continuing on my career path and my work. And right around, like, the early 90s, I was just finishing up my degree. Because I had my son so young, I would take a class, one class at a time at night, you know, weekend classes. Like, I was building up credits little by little by little. And then finally, by the time I was 32, I was at Sonoma State. I was getting ready to graduate that year, and I got myself an internship at Industrial Light & Magic with George Lucas's production company in Marin.
Not too shabby.
Yeah, which is really hard to do, by the way. They get like 600 applicants, twice a year, one in the spring, one in the fall, and they only take like 20 people each time, and so it's a really competitive program. So I was studying to be a graphic designer at the time. I was working in Napa, and I was designing things like wine labels and print collateral for wineries and all kinds of marketing materials, but mostly for wine, in the wine industry. And I loved it. I loved those clients. I loved the whole vibe. I worked for Paul Wagner. Do you know Paul Wagner?
Yes.
He owns Balzac Communications. I started his design department 20 years ago with my friend Heidi Strong. We worked for Paul and ended up doing all kinds of great things to start his design department. And anyway, I was balancing this whole internship and finishing school and trying to make a living and doing all that whole thing. And at ILM, I got to work in the art department and the photography department. And it was a really interesting time because they were coming out with the very first Jurassic Park. Mm-hmm. And all of the visual effects done at Industrial Light & Magic and Lucasfilm before were done in camera. Like Star Wars, all of those were, the compositing was done with film in camera. And so Jurassic Park was, it wasn't the first movie with visual effects, because I think they'd already done visual effects with Hook and with Death Becomes Her. But it was the first time they had, animated dinosaurs. And so I was literally hanging out with the guys making dinosaurs, which was so thrilling.
That is pretty cool.
I was like, I'm going to be a visual effects artist. And since I was already a graphic designer, I thought, well, I can combine with what I know, designing logos and designing type, with it flying around and being composited with other things. And so I was like hell-bent. That's what I was going to learn, you know? So I left there. I ended up freelancing in San Francisco, bouncing around a few ad agencies. That's when I first got exposed to the advertising world.
Okay.
And so I'd gone from PR to advertising and marketing, and then with these new skills started working in commercials. And then I got this really random job offer down in LA to come and work in news. So I worked for Channel One News for 1 year, where Anderson Cooper had been the anchor and had just left like a week before I got there. And I worked with Lisa Ling for a year. And that was a crazy job because it was so fast paced, and working in news, it's like, it's so immediate. What is happening every day is just, right. It was just super intense. So I only stayed a year. I learned a lot. And then I got an offer to work in Hollywood with a production company called New Wave Entertainment that makes trailers, commercials, and all kinds of marketing advertising for TV and film. And I ended up staying 9 years because my job changed every single year. Like, I started working only on movie trailers. Then the next year I was doing main title sequences. Then the next year I was working on whole shows. And so I went from being kind of a entry-level designer / animator to a senior art director. And just, I learned so much while I was there.
That's so cool. And I have to say, like, Jurassic Park. I missed that, so I'm pretty upset with myself because I would have thought that was, you know, I was all blown away that you worked on the Manchurian Candidate. You're on the. I think you honestly are the first person I've ever interviewed that has a legit IMDb bio. I was like, oh my god, this is so cool, and I'm like. Manchurian candidate. And I'm like, all right, I'm sure everybody's going to ask, you know, or everybody would be asking, oh, Denzel Washington. But I'm a huge X-Men fan. So, like, I was like, oh my God, did she meet Liev Schreiber?
No.
No?
Darn it. No. Yeah. Well, like, keep in mind, I'm working on post-production, so it's not like I'm on the set. I'm working in a room and in a facility where we have the film, where I would get to often watch a film before it was finished because we had to craft a trailer.
Right.
And sometimes you craft a movie trailer out of thin air, like if there's nothing shot yet and they squab. You know, I didn't get starstruck a lot, but there was one time where I was in my office and I was on the phone and I was dealing with a client or something. I had my computer in front of me and I saw Morgan Freeman walk by and I went, I have to go by.
Did you?
I was doing the graphics for a project that he had come in to read a voiceover for. I was like, hi.
Did you just, as soon as he talked to you, did you just go, oh,
yeah. I melted.
Wow. Well, that is pretty cool. That is pretty cool. But that was actually going to be a question is like how, you know, they have these films that are, you know, 2 hours that somebody is watching or an hour and a half that somebody is watching. And then they, you know, I know there's got to be 10 hours worth of film.
Oh, yeah.
To make that 1.5 hours. And then you're coming in and you're creating a trailer that makes people want to watch that hour and a half. Like how are you deciding this should be the, you know, do they come to you and say, we want the trailer to have this kind of, you know, thought process or whatever. And then you go in and you are looking through that 10 hours worth of, you know, film or, you know, 100 hours worth of film and saying, I'm going to take this, this, and this. Like, how does that all come together?
Well, it's really interesting because it's very similar to how an ad agency works, where when they're coming up with a campaign for a commercial, for instance, so you have a creative director who's over everybody. You have an account manager who's keeping in touch with the client to figure out what does the client want. Then you've got a creative director, you've got an art director, a producer, and a writer.
Okay.
So it's kind of this pyramid, you know, of people. So you don't work in a vacuum. You always work in a team. And in the trailer world, well, the same thing for creating advertising and marketing for films and television, it's the same thing. So and I've worked with pretty much every single movie studio and every single television network in LA during the time that I was doing this. And so they all have their own internal teams in their marketing department. So they would come to us with a creative brief and it would be like, this is our audience. This is who we want to reach. This is the gist of what this film is about. And I think everybody who has seen a movie trailer can relate to the fact where they see the film and they go, hang on, that trailer didn't have anything to do with that. So sometimes there is some, you know, you can do so much in creative editing to retell a story, you know, mm-hmm. or change, tweak a story or change a story. But at the end of the day, the movie, the studios want the most people to see the film. And so, you know, and how do you tell it in the most compelling, exciting way? I have to say, the company I worked for is New Wave Entertainment, and I had, when I started, it was 50 people in 1996, and when I left in 2005, it was 250 people.
Wow.
And I, like, when I say I had an education, it was so true, and I got to work with some of the most talented people. You know how sometimes you look back at a period in your life and you realize you didn't appreciate it enough while you were in it. Realize that it wouldn't last forever. I think that's true for everything in our lives, you know, where we often think like, oh God, this is so great. And then nothing lasts forever, really. But boy, the team I worked with, so I was designing the graphics, but I was working with a creative director who, by the way, incidentally, may listen to this. Hi, Scott. Scott Williams, actually, he was the first one to be an expat from L.A., and he moved to Cambria with his partner years ago. So they love Paso. They come over here all the time. We hang out a lot now. But we were together almost 9 years, you know. So Scott was our creative director, and then we had a producer, and Shari, and then I worked with various writers. And writers are where the scripts come in. And so when you're watching a movie trailer and you hear either the voiceover that's coming in, and by the way, because I was at one of the top studios one of the top production companies for this, the Don LaFontaine, the voice, before he passed away, he would routinely come to the place that I worked and go to the voiceover booth and walk in, you know, be driven in up to it with a limo and have a like scarf around his neck and come in, and you know, his voice was like golden. It was amazing. But I worked with some incredible audio engineers who would make that happen. And then the editors would, so I wasn't actually editing the trailers. I was designing the graphics that were, you know, in a world, he was a man with a mission. But I was sitting in next to the editors who are actually cutting the film up, and then sitting with the producer who's in touch with the marketing departments. Mm-hmm. And anyway, it was a fascinating, really, really fascinating time of my life. I loved it.
That's pretty cool. That really is. And before we get into talking Paso, the other thing that kind of blew me away was you also were a title designer for the Emmy Awards, for the 56th Annual Emmy Awards. So you have really been on some major, major, you know.
Okay, crazy. So the fun thing about that was at New Wave, I was one of, I want to say, four senior designers at the time, or four or five. And when we would get a job, or when we would get a project in, all of us would sit down and design something. We would design storyboards, and we'd have to print them, and they'd be this color print, like 11 by 17, or, yeah, it's been so long, I forget. 11 by 17, these gorgeous, I still don't even have some, actually. And we would put together these storyboards of what the animation might look like, and you hope that your pitch gets chosen, right? Because then you're the one who gets to execute it and animate it. And the one thing, fast forward or a little tangent, the one thing I love about working in commercials is usually you get to pitch on a commercial, then you work with the ad agency for a while to develop it. Then the shoot is like 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, sometimes a little bit more. And then you're done. So like a month, and you're like, whoop, okay, bye. Or sometimes 2 weeks, you know, it's like here today and then you're on to the next. And right. I'm a Gemini, so I'm always about like, okay, what else can we make, you know? But so the Emmy Awards, at first, I had come up with the design that the team at the Emmys liked. And I was like, yay, I get to design the Emmy Awards. I had to do it by myself. And that went on for, oh my God, like 6 weeks or something. And I was working Saturdays and Sundays, and I'd go in at 7 a.m. and I'd be there till midnight. And mind you, I didn't get overtime. And then halfway through, I was like, shoot me in the head. I got the Emmy.
Why did I pitch this? Oh my gosh.
Remind me not to pitch an award to them.
There you go.
Remind me to make somebody else win the job. You know? it was a lot of work. When it finally aired, I looked at it and I was really, really proud, and it was beautiful and it was awesome. And I'm not a 3D animator, and so that had some 3D elements. So I did have one other animator that I was working with who would animate the 3D, like the statue itself and stuff. But that was one of those, but I was like so glad when it was over.
You're like, yay! Oh.
I want salary, so it's not like I got anything else. Right. I worked my tail off.
But now you can say that that was yours, the 56th Annual Primetime Emmy Awards. Da-da-da-da. All right. And now, a word from our sponsor. Looking to be in the know about Dracena wines? Want to know when we release our new wines? Find out about all of our accolades and get some behind-the-scenes information? Well, all you need to do is sign up for our newsletter. There is no commitment necessary, and I promise you we won't spam your mailbox with loads of messages. Need another reason to sign up? Quite possibly the best reason? You will immediately get a code for a special discount on all of our wines and be privy to newsletter-only specials. Let Dracaena Wines turn your moments into great memories. Sign up simply by heading to our website, dracaenawines.com, and fill out the pop-up or sidebar. It will take less than a minute of your time, but the rewards will last forever. So let's get to our beloved Paso Robles. So we fell in love. My ears perked up when you said that you were the expat from LA and then went up to San Francisco Bay Area, because that's kind of how we fell in love with Paso. I went to college in the LA area. I went to Whittier for my undergrad, and I met my husband, Michael, at work. I was a microbiologist and he was a food chemist. He was a research developer. So we met at work. And then when we started getting into wine, what?
That's sexy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I joke all the time because he was responsible for creating Wishbone salad dressing. And he would bring the product up to my lab, and then I would have to inoculate it with microorganisms. And that's how you determine, A, whether it's safe to eat, and B, the shelf life, how long a product can be on the shelf. So he would bring in, I joke all the time, I'm like, yeah, you think you were the important one, but I'm the one who kept people alive. So really my job was much more important than yours. But
basically you guys had chemistry.
Yeah, there you go. Yes, yes. So when we started getting into wine and we started to, we were like taking vacations to wine industry, obviously we went to Napa Sonoma, because who doesn't go to Napa Sonoma, right? So we went there. And when we decided we were going to live here, eventually retire here, he wanted Northern California because that's all he knew. He had never been to California before I took him there. And I was like, no, 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 no. I want Southern. I want the LA. I want the, that lifestyle. I want that. So one year we were like, you know what? Let's take this Central Coast thing, and let's take a vacation there. And that way, if we like it, you've got 3 hours to go north and I've got 3 hours to go south. We're both happy, blah, blah. And we visited, and it was love at first sight. We fell in love with it. We came back.
What year was that?
I'm going to say it's like 15, 16 years ago. Okay. It was quite some time ago. And we took a couple of trips, and Paso was nothing like it is, obviously. And, when we got here, we're like, oh, there's a wine region here. All right, this is good. This is good. And we ended up purchasing property in Arroyo that we still have to this day, part of the Tally Vineyards. So we have property in Las Ventanas that's sitting there with, sheep and goats eating the grass for us, waiting for us to build on it. And we purchased that within the first year that we visited. And then that was it. Like, we've been going back to Paso from New Jersey back and forth. And when we decided to start the winery, we knew Paso was where we were going to start the winery. So in 2013, that was when our first vintage was. We came here. We were looking to consult with people, finding fruit, doing all this stuff. And we fell in love with the people of Paso. Like, they're just so generous and so open. And, talking to the people, coming from the East Coast, like the New York area, there's so much competition and people aren't sharing their little, you might take this from me type thing. And in Paso, you ask another winemaker a question about how they go about their fruit that they're getting on the same vineyard that you're getting, and they're spending hours talking to you, generously sharing all the information. And it's a wonderful feeling. And I don't think that's everywhere. Like, I mean, not to say anything bad about our neighbors to the north, but you don't get that feeling there that you get in Paso. And you're nodding, so I'm going, you're agreeing with me, right?
The personality of this town is like nothing I've ever seen before. And I've traveled a lot, and it's always been so welcoming. And so my first trip here, I told you, I grew up in Napa Valley as a kid. I went to St. Helena High. So I went to school within the Chapelets and the Graces, and, you know, and I was like the poor kid because my dad was a realtor. and my class was 105 kids.
Okay. Tiny.
The whole school was like 500, something like that. And now we're still all Facebook friends, which is really fun.
That's awesome.
I know. But, I loved it. I actually loved being in St. Helena in the 70s. It was absolutely magic. And then going back to LA, and then I loved my career. It was awesome, and I learned a lot, and I had some exciting things, and, you know, working on the trailers, that's actually when I started directing, because I started shooting my own little projects on the side. So I grew as a filmmaker and as a creative. I was able to grow. But I always miss living in LA. I knew I would leave. I would read, you know how every year there's published like the best places to live in the U.S. and it's usually places like Boulder, Colorado, or Asheville, North Carolina, or Ashland, Oregon, or Portland, or Austin, or, you know, I don't know. And I would always fantasize like, where will I move and when will I move? And it was in my late 40s that it was actually my birthday. My birthday's June 13th, and 2008, I would joke, at the time I was married, and my ex and I had a production company in L.A., and we were producing commercials, and it was the year, later we would joke, it was the year we couldn't afford to go to Cannes in France for our annual summer visit, which we couldn't, but there's a huge advertising festival there in June, which is 1 month after in May there's the Cannes Film Festival, right. But in June our advertising festival, which is so brilliant. It's like the best party week ever, and we would love to go every year, and we could always write it off, but 2008 it wasn't happening. And so we were gonna go wine tasting, and we were planning to come to go to Napa Valley, and a friend of ours who actually lived here in Paso, said, well, you guys should go to Paso. And I said, I remember saying, what's Paso? I've never heard of it.
Right.
I think every time I've driven north for the last, you know, the previous 20 years or whatever, I always took the 5. So I didn't take the 101. So I didn't even know what this town was or what was here. I remember driving through here as a kid, like going to Hearst Castle and going to Anderson's Pea Soup and, you know, stuff like that. But it wasn't on my radar at all. So we looked it up online, and I said, well, that looks really fun, and it's only 3.5 hours away. Let's go there. So we came up, and it was that, you know, that Friday in June where it's the first concert in the park?
Oh.
Mm-hmm. And everybody shows up. Like, so Paso Robles, for your listeners or for your viewers who don't know this, Paso Robles has the most beautiful concerts in the park in the summertime, and now they're held on Fridays, Thursdays. But back in the early 2000s, they were held on Fridays. And the whole town comes, and they bring their picnic blankets, they bring their wine. You're not supposed to drink in our downtown park. That's frowned upon. But the exception to the rule is 5 o'clock, everybody pops corks, everybody's brought like a picnic, and they brought their blankets and their chairs. And every week there's music, and one week it's blues, and one week it's bluegrass, or country, or swing, or Spanish, flamenco, whatever. And the very first one every year is a madhouse. Everybody shows up because we're waiting for summer.
Yeah.
It's almost like the start of the summer, you know? So we ended up showing up Friday afternoon unbeknownst to us, it was going to be Concerts in the Park. And we went into what used to be the wine attic, which is now Thomas Hill Organics.
Oh, okay.
And we had one glass of wine. And we walked over to what is now La Cosecha, which used to be Vinoteca. And we had another glass of wine. And then we went, well, let's go walking around and find a place to have dinner. And we walked outside, and I swear I was like rubbing my eyes and clicking my heels together like Dorothy. I was like, I'm home. There's no place like home, and I'm home. This is it. I'm moving here. This is it.
I can relate. I can relate 100% because that's exactly how I felt about Paso when we went there the first time. The smile on my face, you know, my cheeks hurt from smiling the entire time. And I loved it. I loved it.
There's nothing, and I've been to some cute towns. Like, I've been to Aspen, and I've been to Boulder, and I've been to Vancouver, or other cute, and of course in California, we're so blessed and so lucky because there's a ton of beautiful small towns all throughout California. And, but I've never, ever seen a place like this that's so friendly. And there's people, it's a really good mix of people who've been here forever, mm-hmm. who kind of want to, make it. Stick their stake in the ground and make sure it doesn't change too much. But then there's another whole mix of people who've made a conscious decision for quality of life to move here. Yep. And all of those people are so happy to be here.
Mm-hmm. Agree, 100%. And when we first started our winery in Paso, we started in Tin City. Our first vintage 2013 was on Limerick Lane.
Was first crush there?
That was what it was. That was where we started. With first crush with Lowell and Becky.
We're good friends with Lowell and Becky. We love them.
Yeah, that was where we started. And I remember driving into Tin City. And nothing, there.
Nothing was there.
No, and we were like, the only thing was we drove to First Crush, and there was this Barrel House Brewery. was it. That was like pretty much it. And we went into First Crush, and it was, I had to laugh at the part in your video of your film about it, because when we walked into First Crush, there was a rock climbing wall in there. And my job that pays for the winery is I teach adventure ed. I teach kids how to rock climb. I teach kids how to do. And I walked in and I was like, oh my God, And then in your film in Tin City, there was like the link to all of this. Why is there rock climbing stuff in there?
English. He builds those beautiful things. I know.
So
what character?
I was like, oh my God. But over the years, Tin City has come from Barrel House Brewing, which we never go and don't stop in there because, it's the best place ever. In fact, we stopped in with our little semi-social distancing right before everything got shut down. Everybody was in there with their own little pot of people, and then the 6 feet between the next pot of people and the 6 feet and the next pot of people. But I'm very happy that we got our last bit of the Barrel House before this all came down. But it has grown so immensely since then. And that's why when I received the email to watch the link to watch this video, I was like, oh my God, this is fantastic. I'm so happy that somebody did a film on Tin City, because it really has become an epicenter for this community. And as you mentioned, we have the downtown that is one epicenter, but going further south, you have this Tin City, and it has exploded into an amazing area. And so tell us about the film. Like, how did you, was it your idea? Did you pitch that? Or did somebody say, you know, I think we should do a film on Tin City and you're the person for it?
I wish that were the case, but no, Tin City is a labor of love project for me.
Okay.
It started as just such a random, you know, like so many wonderful things in life. It started out very organically. Right before I started working on that film, for the previous 4 years, I'd been directing and producing a foodie travel show for Visit California.
Okay.
And the show is called California Dream Eater. It's on YouTube. You can watch it, almost 80 episodes. And the concept of that show is that my team and I, it stars a gentleman named Chase Ramsey, who is the California Dream Eater, and he is funny and just fun to watch and irreverent and kooky, and he has the best job in the world. We got to eat everything where we went. And it was his job to eat it, describe it, and as if we were all there. And the project came through a wonderful ad agency in Sacramento called Mirren Carson. And so I was working with that team to bring this show to life. And so we started really humble with that show, where it was just a couple little episodes. And then the Visit California loved it, so they ordered more and more. And then I wanted to up my game. And so I bought a much higher end, fancier camera. And the production of that show is, it works like this. There would be 7 of us as a crew plus Chase. Okay. So it would be me as the director, assistant director, a sound guy, 2 camera guys, and our hair stylist. Like, not hair and makeup, but like she would cast it. She would keep Chase look good, and you know,
when he dribbled the food on him, find another outfit.
His whole deal. He's got cute glasses and a bow tie. I used to, rest in peace, I love Anthony Bourdain, but before he passed, I would describe Chase's picture Anthony Bourdain, but in a bow tie and glasses and shorter and your smile, you know. But yeah, so we were working on this really intense show that was so much fun, and I wanted to put my new camera through its paces before I went on the road with it. So okay. I grabbed my sound guy and I grabbed 2 of my camera people, and I said, let's go, like, just let's go shoot something. And a lot of the winemakers in Tin City are my friends, because I've been working in wine marketing and print design and all, you know, web design and stuff in Paso since I got here. I started Juice in 2010, right after I got here. And so my company, my production company here is now 10 years old. And I'll tell you more about some of those projects. But I was like, let's just go down there, and because it's kind of cool and new now, let's do a few interviews. And I would come back and look at the footage and think, oh my God, these stories are incredible. This is a film. You know, it just kind of happened. And so then I was like, that was 2016, 2017. We, you know, every chance we got in between other projects that I was doing for brands or for the Foodie Travel Show, I would be, come on, crew, let's go down to Tin City and go hang out and shoot some stuff and just get some more stories. So it took like a year and a half to film. And then we started editing halfway through the second year. And then it took a year to edit. And then it took another year to find a distributor. But it was completely self-funded. I paid for all of it.
Wow.
But, you know, it was a little bit out of time. And then it was sort of a point of no return where I couldn't stop, you know.
Your obsession.
Plus, as a director and as a creator and a filmmaker who spent my entire career working in, like, movie trailers, commercials, and really, really short-form entertainment and marketing and advertising, like the longest, you know, I routinely do, I am like so good at 30 seconds, 60 seconds, you know, 15 minutes, 5 minutes, I can do it. I've done some half hour things, but I'd never tackled a full length feature, and it was always a bucket list dream. And
well, I have to say you nailed it. You nailed it. I thought it was fantastic. And, you know, I think partially, you know, I'm drawn to it because of, you know, who we are. But it's, I loved seeing the people, you know, the winemakers just talking about their passion. And that's really what, I don't think anybody is a winemaker to, at least in past, you know, we're not really starting the wine industry to make billions and billions of dollars. It's that passion to do what you love. And I don't think, I could be completely wrong, but I don't think that's always easy to show, to, you know, to get through that camera. I think, you know, I can take a picture and it's a picture. Somebody who actually knows what they're doing takes a picture and it's, you know, a photographer takes a picture and there's emotion in that photo. There's all of that. And I think that's what you did with this group of winemakers, is you were able to bring out their passion and show it to the people who are watching this video, this movie, you know? And my memory is off. It's like an hour and a half, correct?
Yeah, it's an hour and 20.
Hour and 20. Okay. So for an hour and 20 minutes in this movie, you're getting to see the, you know, people who have no clue other than I pick up a bottle of wine and drink it. You get to show what it's like to drive that forklift, because you gotta know how to drive the forklift, you know.
I love the whole forklift.
You know, and I think that that's a talent that, I mean, I can shoot a movie. It's not going to go anywhere, but I mean, I can shoot it. I have a camera. I can do that. But you brought out, you knew what to ask, how to bring out that passion, the angles. So that's my next question, is how do you decide, okay, I'm interviewing this person, but I don't want it really, because it really wasn't like an interview, you know?
No,
it was
essentially, because I do a lot of, interviews for more conservative clients. So those interviews look more straightforward. And with Tin City, I intentionally wanted the interviews to be kind of wonky. Like when you see Stu and he's sitting back in his chair with his knee up, or you see Brett and he's like in his barrel, you know, or Valia on her forklift, like, you know, I intentionally wanted our conversations with them to feel intimate, like they're right there. And I think you can do that when you break, you know how in so many creative endeavors they say learn the rules and then break them? Yeah, that was me breaking all the rules with how the camera angles should look for an interview.
Well, I thought it was fantastic, and I loved, I want to hear more about, and I'm blanking, you mentioned him before, the rock climber, the one who actually is the brains behind.
Oh, Frank English. He's the developer at Tin City.
So
the landlord.
I have not had the pleasure of meeting him, although now that I think about it, I have probably run into him at Barrel House multiple times. But so I had a little behind the scenes type thing. Who was like the quirkiest or the funniest to deal with? So like who had the most outtakes?
And did you see the end?
Yes.
Yeah. I don't want to give it away, but I'll kind of look. After working on so many, I can't even tell you, so many films in LA, like my favorite thing was when I had to put together the outfit. So, I don't know if you saw in my IMDb, my Cameron Diaz movie, The Sweetest Thing.
Yeah, I did.
On IMDb, and it's one of those weird situations where the director turned in a film that was only, it was like 89 minutes or something. It was like too short, and the studio came to us and said, we need to make a like 7-minute long credit thing and have fun with it. And I designed the whole thing to make the movie to be a 15-minute thing. Like part of my job. I was actually thinking of that a lot when we were editing Tin City. By the way, with editing Tin City, I want to do a shout out to Lucas Bright, who is my co-producer, and he edited the bulk of the film. It was a team effort. The credits in the beginning, every single person who was also a camera person also helped to edit, but Luke was the one who took it all together, or put it all together, and came up with like all the clever bits. And it's really interesting. They say in Hollywood, a film is made 3 times. One time in the script, when it's written down, it's by a writer. A film is crafted by the writer. The second time it's made is in the production, because you have cameras rolling, you have humans, and you know, shit happens. Like, okay, dog walks through the frame, or fly buzzes in your nose, or what, you know, whatever. And sometimes it's good things, and sometimes it's bad things. Things you cannot control, just because we're all human. And, or the performance of an actor is informed by something that just happens, whether it's wind, or they, you know, jumped off the building and have a shot of adrenaline, or whatever. Okay. Like, you can't control. And then the third time a film is made is in the edit. And each stage is equally as important as the rest. And Lucas Bryce did such a phenomenal job of editing Sin City. So, yay. Love him.
Yay. So, talking about, like, the storyboard.
Oh, yeah.
Take a, in your... In,
I mean, that's the thing with a documentary, is that you start with an idea. And so many times, because you don't have a script, you're just doing interviews, and the film informs itself. It's like I said, it started as an accident. It started as a camera test. And then I said, how's it going? What do you love about this? You kept at night about it. And then all of a sudden it was like, holy moly, there's a common thread with, obviously, with people who not only love to make wine, beer, and spirits, but also people who love to drink those products and love to enjoy them. And I'm hoping, my goal was to make a film that was as enjoyable for everybody who loves to make those products as those who love to enjoy them.
Well, I think you did. I said it before, I'll say it again. I think you nailed it on the head. It was, I sat there and the hour and 20 minutes went by very quickly, and I laughed at things. Is my pretty pony, right? Or was it my pretty pony? Yeah, like that's it. And the showing of climbing the barrels and barrel sampling. You know, I mean, we need to be monkeys sometime and get up there and wiggle around and do that stuff. Brian Benson being in there. And see, now he to me is such a success story, because I remember when we first started our winery, he was in the back of Dark Star, you know, and he had his own little, you know, mom and dad are in the front at Dark Star, and he's in the back. And I fully remember a bachelorette party coming in to his his little mini tasting room back there. And it was so loud. And when they left, he came out and he looked like he had been to hell and back. He was like, no more bachelorette parties. You know. And then, you know, they introduced us to, you know, and now there he is in Tin City and being so successful. And, you know, that's what I love, that, you know, everybody, you don't see the main people, and especially the ones that were in the film, these people, they don't have millions of dollars and decided, well, you know what, I'm going to make wine. And that's, you know, that's true in Paso. You don't have that. You know, you have these people who have grown up in the industry, either, you know, farming or just truly have that passion and want to do it themselves and are in it from start to finish. And that's what Tin City shows. So
Brian was one of our, he was one of the only ones who was like a kid in Paso growing up. And a couple of them had like wine in their family, but, you know, so many of those stories are entrepreneurship and just stubbornness and gumption and guts and, you know, tenacity. And we're just going to make it happen. And these are people who don't have vast vineyards or huge estates. They're just, you know, making these beautiful wines and spirits and beer with their own ingenuity and their own passion and their own drive.
Mm-hmm. And being involved in it from get to go, you know, from start to finish, you know, it's not, and that I think is, and when you sat down and spoke about, when you sat down and actually spoke about how you started Tin City and interviewing people, you know, it's not just like I can pay the rent in Tin City. He wanted very specific personality.
Yeah, Mike was picking and choosing, and it was so cool because he would involve his current tenants and say, hey, is this person a good fit for us, you know? It was so funny because, you know, as everything in life, everything changes, and so it's now kind of a time capsule of, you know, 2016, 2017, a little of 2018, and of course, since then, now Tin City has a couple great restaurants, and we tried to include, like, Eto Pasta just had started, and so we tried to include some of that beautiful pasta making and those offerings that they have there. And, you know, it'll continue to grow and evolve and change. But I was really, really happy to capture it when it was, like, we'll probably all look back on it and go, oh, remember this was kind of the early days, you know?
Right. Right. And back then you could park there pretty easily. Now I'm happy they added that parking lot, if you could call it that, a little further outside of it. But it's just it's a tribute to how well Tin City is doing. And and you know, when people say they're going to go to Paso, we always recommend stopping in at Tin City.
I think definitely. It's one of the destinations now. It's like, you know, venture out on the west side, the east side, and you know, all the different areas. Mm-hmm. We have so many great AVAs now.
Right.
But a stop in Tin City kind of gives you a lot of the taste of not only our local AVAs, but some really wonderful ones in California. Because I know so many of those makers are sourcing really lovely fruit from south and north.
Mm-hmm. You know, yes.
They're doing a good job. Yeah.
And I think that had a lot to do with the bursting that Paso is now. People are really starting, you know, I mean, granted, we were named, you know, where you want to visit, where you want to live, as you're talking, you know, so that's helping. But that, I don't think that would have been on the map if Tin City hasn't done, because I think as much as people can come to Paso and drive country-wise, the downtown district coming together with a bunch of wine tasting rooms in there is a central location. And then to be able to park your car and walk, really have an entire day of whatever you want in right? Whatever you want. You can have, you can eat there. You can have ice cream there, right? You can drink beer. You can, you know, have spirits now, cider. Everything is right at your hands. And it's, I want to thank you for doing that film to help promote that area that we love so much.
Did you see Pastor Wyman?
Yes.
I'm the director of that too.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So Casey Biggs and I have done a lot of, we've collaborated on a lot of projects here. And I shoot a lot of documentary, but also comedy. And yeah, that's been a really fun series too.
Wow. You are a busy bee.
Check out Taco Wine Man.
Okay. You know, if you shoot me, there, how people can get that, how, tell people who are listening how they can see it.
Yeah. It's, so my company, my production company is called Juice Media. I called it Juice because when I started in 2010, I thought, you know, and I had come from this background of working with wineries in Napa Valley when I was a young creative, and I was like, well, nothing happens without the juice.
That is true.
Nothing gets sold without the juice. So that's where I came up with that. And I started in 2010 and started with Hope Family Wines was my first client. Thank you, Joel Peterson and Austin Hope. They've been amazing. And then the Paso Wine Country Alliance had hired me to do the Paso Wine Man series, and then since then I've worked with a lot of, most of the brands actually, many, and then several brands in Napa Valley as well, and then kind of, so food, wine, and travel is still my jam, you know, even after doing Visit California, and so I know how to shoot really beautiful food and really beautiful wine.
And they do go well together.
They do, and that's my current jam, and then in the, I've also, I have another little side hustle, which is so much fun. I've started a portrait studio in downtown. So it's one block west of the park, right across from the new Piccolo Hotel in Il Cortile. And with that, I specialize in photographing women. And I give them a magazine-style photo shoot. You come in, you get a hair and makeup. Get a complete professional makeover. I have a collection of over 100 dresses and gowns from all over the world in every size for my clients to wear. Because as much as we love how friendly Paso is, there's not much couture here. So I had to bring in a lot of couture. And I have these gorgeous backdrops that are hand-painted by the same artist, Oliphant Studios, that paints them for Annie Leibovitz. And Vanity Fair, and I have created this beautiful downtown studio where you walk in and it's like you're in another world, and you can come in and have your portrait taken and feel like a celebrity for a day and then have gorgeous photographs that you'll keep the rest of your life.
Oh, that's fantastic.
That just warms my heart so much.
That is fantastic. But yeah. I would like to vote for more Paso Wine Man because...
Me too.
I was so upset. I remember when they were coming out on a somewhat regular basis, and I would get so happy every time there was a new one, and I would share the shit out of that because they were so awesome, and I love him. And then... Okay, we're done. And I was like, no. So I vote for bringing him back. I know he sings and I know he does, you know, he's very busy, but I vote for bringing him back.
You know, Casey and I filmed a romantic drama here, or he wrote it, I directed it, and we cast one. So, you know, he was on Star Trek for many years.
No, how did I not know that? No.
So Casey starred on Star Trek for many, many years, Deep Space Nine. His character was called Damar.
Okay.
He helped me cast a leading lady, and then I helped I found two other characters, and then Chase Ramsey, actually, who was my California Dream Meter, plays a role as well. And so we have this really fun short romantic drama. It's about a half hour. It's called Heart of Paradise.
Okay.
And it was filmed at the Niner Winery at the Heart Hill.
Right.
You know, and you can find it on, if you go to my website, hellojuice.com, there's a link where you can watch it.
There. Oh, okay. Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. All right.
And Casey plays a winemaker who's a bachelor winemaker, and he and his assistant meet a mother and daughter who come to the winery to try to find a place for the daughter to get married. Except she's engaged to the wrong guy. And that's all I can tell.
That's all you can say. That's all you can say. And yes, and Heart Hill is just the worst place ever to.
It's so true. I know. We think it would make like the perfect, if we could do a feature length version of it, it would make the perfect Hallmark movie or Lifetime movie. Or
it sounds like it. I think yeah. You should start petitioning for it.
Yeah, it's very romantic. Very sweet. It's a testament to Casey's range.
Bring him back. We need more.
Yeah.
All right. So we're just at about an hour, and that's usually where we start to wrap things up. And the last thing I like to do with everybody is play my little game of opposites. So
Okay. Are you
ready? I'm just going to give you two terms, whichever one is, you know, relates with you a little bit more or resonates with you a little bit more, that's your answer, and it's right. There is no right or wrong answer.
Okay.
Right. So we're going to start off with non-wine related terms, and then we'll go to wine stuff. Okay? All right. So night or day?
Night.
Sunset or sunrise?
Sunset.
Black or white?
Black.
Walk or run? Food or drink?
Drink.
Old world or new world?
Oof, old world.
Sweet or dry?
Dry.
Bubbles or still?
Duh.
I know that answer. oak or stainless?
Oak.
Drink now or drink later?
I like drink later.
Okay. Vintage or non-vintage?
Vintage.
Blend or varietal?
Blend.
Cork or screw cap?
Cork.
Okay. So Napa or Sonoma, but the real answer is Paso. Commercial or indigenous?
Indigenous.
Bordeaux or Rhone?
Rhone.
And warm climate or cool climate?
Warm.
Paso. All right. Well, thank you so much, Dina, for joining. And I'm so happy that we were able to get this together. And thank you not only for this, but thank you for being so dedicated to helping promote the wine region, the area that we adore so much.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it, Lori.
Absolutely.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. One day we will run into each other in Tin City. I know.
Next time you're in Paso, call me. We'll go have some wine.
We will. Absolutely will. All right. Have a great night and enjoy your weekend. Okay?
Okay, you too.
Bye.
Bye.
This has been another episode of Exploring the Wine Glass. Thanks for listening. If you have suggestions on what topics you would like me to discuss, please reach out on social media. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook as Exploring the Wine Glass. I'm also on LinkedIn as Lori Hoyt Budd. Of course, you can always email me at exploringthewineglass@gmail.com. If you enjoyed our podcast, please rate, review, and subscribe on your favorite podcast catcher to help others find me more easily. Until next week, slàinte.